Men hurried to fasten a door seal behind them. Glow globes showed a broad, domed ceiling space with a raised ledge on one side and a passage leading off from it. Paul leaped to the ledge with Gurney right behind him, led the way into the passage. The others headed for another passage opposite the entrance. Paul led the way through an anteroom and into a chamber with dark, wine-colored hangings on its walls. "We can have some privacy here for a while," Paul said. "The others will respect my..." An alarm symbol clanged from the outer chamber, was followed by shouting and clashing of weapons. Paul whirled, ran back through the anteroom, and out onto the atrium lip above the outer chamber. Gurney was right behind, weapon drawn. Beneath them, on the floor of the cave, swirled a melee of struggling figures. Paul stood an instant assessing the scene, separating the Fremen robes and burkas from the costumes of those they opposed. Senses that his mother had trained to detect the most subtle clues picked out a significant fact. The Fremen fought against men wearing smuggler robes, but the smugglers were crouched in trios, backed into triangles where pressed. That habit of close fighting was a trademark of the Imperial Sardaukar. A Fedakin in the crowd saw Paul, and his battle cry was lifted to echo in the chamber. "Muad'Dib! Muad'Dib! Muad'Dib!" Another eye had also picked Paul out. A black knife came hurtling toward him. Paul dodged, heard the knife clatter against stone behind him, glanced to see Gurney retrieve it. The triangular knots were being pressed back now. Gurney held the knife up in front of Paul's eyes, pointed to the hairline yellow coil of Imperial color, the golden lion crest, multifaceted eyes at the pommel. Sardaukar for certain. Paul stepped out to the lip of the ledge. Only three of the Sardaukar remained. Bloody rag mounds of Sardaukar and Fremen lay in a twisted pattern across the chamber.
"Hold!" Paul shouted. "The Duke Paul Atreides commands you to hold!"
The fighting wavered, hesitated.
"You, Sardaukar!" Paul called to the remaining group. "By whose orders do you threaten a ruling duke?"
And quickly, as his men started to press in around the Sardaukar,
"Hold, I say!"
One of the cornered trio straightened.
"Who says we're Sardaukar?" he demanded.
Paul took the knife from Gurney, held it aloft.
"This says you're Sardaukar!"
"Then who says you're a ruling duke?" the man demanded.
Paul gestured to the Fedakin.
"These men say I'm a ruling duke. Your own emperor bestowed Arrakis on House Atreides. I am House Atreides."
The Sardaukar stood silent, fidgeting. Paul studied the man, tall, flat-featured, with a pale scar across half his left cheek. Anger and confusion were betrayed in his manner, but still there was that pride about him without which a Sardaukar appeared undressed, and with which he could appear fully clothed, though naked. Paul glanced to one of his Fedakin lieutenants, said,
"Korba, how came they to have weapons?"
"They held back knives concealed in cunning pockets within their stillsuits," the lieutenant said.
Paul surveyed the dead and wounded across the chamber, brought his attention back to the lieutenant. There was no need for words. The lieutenant lowered his eyes.
"Where is Chani?"
Paul asked and waited, breath held, for the answer.
Stilgar spirited her aside.
He nodded toward the other passage, glanced at the dead and wounded.
"I hold myself responsible for this mistake, Muad'Dib."
"How many of these Sardaukar were there, Gurney?"
Paul asked.
10.
Paul leaped lightly to the floor of the chamber, strode across to stand within striking distance of the Sardaukar spokesman. A tense air came over the Fedakin. They did not like him thus exposed to danger. This was the thing they were pledged to prevent because the Fremen wished to preserve the wisdom of Muad'Dib. Without turning, Paul spoke to his lieutenant.
"How many are our casualties?"
4 wounded, 2 dead, Muad'Dib."
Paul saw motion beyond the Sardaukar. Chani and Stilgar were standing in the other passage. He returned his attention to the Sardaukar, staring into the off-world whites of the spokesman's eyes.
"You, what is your name?" Paul demanded.
The man stiffened, glanced left and right.
"Don't try it," Paul said. "It's obvious to me that you were ordered to seek out and destroy Muad'Dib. I'll warrant you were the ones suggested seeking spice in the deep desert."
A gasp from Gurney behind him brought a thin smile to Paul's lips. Blood suffused the Sardaukar's face.
"What you see before you is more than Muad'Dib," Paul said. 7 of you are dead for 2 of us. 3 for 1. Pretty good against Sardaukar, eh?"
The man came up on his toes, sank back as the Fedakin pressed forward.
"I asked your name," Paul said, and he called up the subtleties of voice. "Tell me your name!"
"Captain Aramsham, Imperial Sardaukar,"
the man snapped. His jaw dropped. He stared at Paul in confusion. The manner about him that had dismissed this cavern as a barbarian warren melted away.
"Well, Captain Aramsham," Paul said, "the Harkonnens would pay dearly to learn what you now know. And the Emperor, what he wouldn't give to learn an Atreides still lives despite his treachery."
The captain glanced left and right at the two men remaining to him. Paul could almost see the thoughts turning over in the man's head. Sardaukar did not submit, but the Emperor had to learn of this threat. Still using the voice, Paul said,
"Submit, Captain!"
The man at the captain's left leaped without warning toward Paul, met the flashing impact of his own captain's knife in his chest. The attacker hit the floor in a sodden heap with the knife still in him. The captain faced his sole remaining companion.
"I decide what best serves His Majesty," he said. "Understood?"
The other Sardaukar's shoulders slumped.
"Drop your weapon," the captain said.
The Sardaukar obeyed. The captain returned his attention to Paul.
"I have killed a friend for you," he said. "Let us always remember that."
"You're my prisoners," Paul said. "You submitted to me. Whether you live or die is of no importance." He motioned to his guard to take the two Sardaukar, signaled the lieutenant who had searched the prisoners. The guard moved in, hustled the Sardaukar away. Paul bent toward his lieutenant.
"Muad'Dib," the man said, "I failed you and..."
"The failure was mine, Korba," Paul said. "I should have warned you what to seek. In the future, when searching Sardaukar, remember this. Remember, too, that each has a false toenail or two that can be combined with other items secreted about their bodies to make an effective transmitter. They'll have more than one false tooth. They carry coils of shiga wire in their hair, so fine you can barely detect it, yet strong enough to garrote a man and cut off his head in the process. With Sardaukar, you must scan them, scope them, both reflex and hard ray. Cut off every scrap of body hair. And when you're through, be certain you haven't discovered everything."
He looked up at Gurney, who had moved close to listen.
"Then we best kill them," the lieutenant said. Paul shook his head, still looking at Gurney.
"No, I want them to escape."
Gurney stared at him.
"Sire," he breathed.
"Yes?"
"Your man here is right. Kill those prisoners at once. Destroy all evidence of them. You've shamed Imperial Sardaukar. When the Emperor learns that, he'll not rest until he has you over a slow fire."
"The Emperor's not likely to have that power over me," Paul said. He spoke slowly, coldly. Something had happened inside him while he faced the Sardaukar. A sum of decisions had accumulated in his awareness.
"Gurney," he said, "are there many guildsmen around Rabban?"
Gurney straightened, eyes narrowed.
"Your question makes no..."
"Are there?" Paul barked.
"Arrakis is crawling with guild agents. They're buying spice as though it were the most precious thing in the universe. Why else do you think we ventured this far into..."
"It is the most precious thing in the universe," Paul said. "To them."
He looked toward Stilgar and Chani, who were now crossing the chamber toward him.
"And we control it, Gurney."
"The Harkonnens control it," Gurney protested.
"The people who can destroy a thing, they control it," Paul said.
He waved a hand to silence further remarks from Gurney, nodded to Stilgar, who stopped in front of Paul, Chani beside him. Paul took the Sardaukar knife in his left hand, presented it to Stilgar.
"You live for the good of the tribe," Paul said. "Could you draw my life's blood with that knife?"
"For the good of the tribe," Stilgar growled.
"Then use that knife," Paul said.
"Are you calling me out?" Stilgar demanded.
"If I do," Paul said, "I shall stand there without weapon and let you slay me."
Stilgar drew in a quick, sharp breath. Chani said,
"Usul,"
then glanced at Gurney, back to Paul. While Stilgar was still weighing his words, Paul said,
"You are Stilgar, a fighting man. When the Sardaukar began fighting here, you were not in the front of battle. Your first thought was to protect Chani."
"She is my niece," Stilgar said. "If there'd been any doubt of your Fedaken handling those scum..."
"Why was your first thought of Chani?" Paul demanded.
"It wasn't."
"Oh?"
"It was of you," Stilgar admitted.
"Do you think you could lift your hand against me?" Paul asked.
Stilgar began to tremble.
"It's the way," he muttered.
"It's the way to kill off-world strangers found in the desert and take their water as a gift from Shai-Hulud," Paul said. "Yet you permitted two such to live one night, my mother and myself."
As Stilgar remained silent, trembling, staring at him, Paul said,
"Ways change, Still. You have changed them yourself."
Stilgar looked down at the yellow emblem on the knife he held.
"When I am Duke Anarakeen with Chani by my side, do you think I'll have time to concern myself with every detail of governing Tabor Siege?" Paul asked. "Do you concern yourself with the internal problems of every family?"
Stilgar continued staring at the knife.
"Do you think I wish to cut off my right arm?" Paul demanded.
Slowly, Stilgar looked up at him.
"You," Paul said, "do you think I wish to deprive myself or the tribe of your wisdom and strength?"
In a low voice, Stilgar said,
"The young man of my tribe, whose name is known to me,
This young man I could kill on the challenge floor, Shai-Hulud willing. The Lisan al-Gaib, him I could not harm. You knew this when you handed me this knife.
I knew it, Paul agreed. Stilgar opened his hand. The knife clattered against the stone of the floor.
Ways change, he said.
Chani, Paul said, go to my mother. Send her here that her council will be available and...
But you said we could go to the south, she protested.
I was wrong, he said. The Harkonnens are not there. The war is not there. She took a deep breath, accepting this as a desert woman accepted all necessities in the midst of a life involved with death.
You will give my mother a message for her ears alone, Paul said. Tell her that Stilgar acknowledges me, Duke of Arrakis, but a way must be found to make the young men accept this without combat.
Chani glanced at Stilgar.
Do as he says, Stilgar growled. We both know he could overcome me, and I could not raise my hand against him, for the good of the tribe.
I shall return with your mother, Chani said.
Send her, Paul said. Stilgar's instinct was right. I am stronger when you are safe. You will remain in the siege. She started to protest, swallowed it.
Sihaya, Paul said, using his intimate name for her. He whirled away to the right, met Gurney's glaring eyes.
The interchange between Paul and the older Fremen had passed as though in a cloud around Gurney since Paul's reference to his mother.
Your mother, Gurney said.
Idaho saved us the night of the raid, Paul said, distracted by the parting with Chani.
Right now, we've...
What of Duncan Idaho, my lord? Gurney asked.
He's dead, buying us a bit of time to escape.
The she-witch alive, Gurney thought. The one I swore vengeance against, alive. And it's obvious Duke Paul doesn't know what manner of creature gave him birth. The evil one betrayed his own father to the Harkonnens.
Paul pressed past him, jumped up to the ledge. He glanced back, noted that the wounded and dead had been removed, and he thought bitterly that here was another chapter in the legend of Paul Muad'Dib.
I didn't even draw my knife, but it will be said of this day that I slew 20 Sardaukar by my own hand.
Gurney followed with Stilgar, stepping on ground that he did not even feel. The cavern with its yellow light of glow-globes was forced out of his thoughts by rage.
The she-witch alive, while those she betrayed are bones in lonesome graves. I must contrive it that Paul learns the truth about her before I slay her.
How often it is that the angry man rages denial of what his inner self is telling him.
The Collected Sayings of Muad'Dib by the Princess Irulan. The crowd in the cavern assembly chamber radiated that pack feeling Jessica had sensed the day Paul killed Jameis. There was murmuring nervousness in the voices. Little clicks gathered like knots among the robes. Jessica tucked a message cylinder beneath her robe as she emerged to the ledge from Paul's private quarters. She felt rested after the long journey up from the south, but still rankled that Paul would not yet permit them to use the captured ornithopters.
"We do not have full control of the air," he had said, "and we must not become dependent upon off-world fuel. Both fuel and aircraft must be gathered and saved for the day of maximum effort."
Paul stood with a group of the younger men near the ledge. The pale light of glow-globes gave the scene a tinge of unreality. It was like a tableau, but with the added dimension of warren smells, the whispers, the sounds of shuffling feet. She studied her son, wondering why he had not yet trotted out his surprise, Gurney Halleck. Thought of Gurney disturbed her with its memories of an easier past, days of love and beauty with Paul's father. Stilgar waited with a small group of his own at the other end of the ledge. There was a feeling of inevitable dignity about him, the way he stood without talking.
"We must not lose that man," Jessica thought. "Paul's plan must work. Anything else would be highest tragedy."
She strode down the ledge, passing Stilgar without a glance, stepped down into the crowd. A way was made for her as she headed toward Paul, and silence followed her,